stand. Okay, we have our flags are on the screen. Ready to begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The announcement of closed session by a unanimous vote of 7. The board ratified a settlement agreement with Mr. and Mrs. Sutherland on 11-12-14 regarding an Office of Administrative Hearing, OAH, due process filing for specialized transportation services for their children. Now we'll hear from our student representative, Stephanie.
Sorry. Tonight would be strings recital, Wednesday choir and vocal text, Thursday beginning band and band recital, Friday jazz band, guitar and drum line. For Lyndhurst report, old business. President Council was on November 20th. Thanksgiving break was on November 24th through the 28th. Talent show rehearsals were on December 3rd through the 4th. Talent show was on December 5th. Sports banquet was on December 8th. New business, Senate meeting on the 11th, winter concert on the 11th, finals and minimum day on December 17th through the 19th, and winter break is December 22nd through January 9th. And for Marysville High School's report, November 21st through December 12th will be adopt a family, provide gifts for the holidays for the family throughout the area. December 1st through the 12th would be SHAM drive. SHAM drive stands for scarves, hats, and mitten drives. Those can donate, students can donate throughout the school. December 1st to the 12th will be also Angel Tree gives an opportunity for students and staff and community to donate to children in need. Toys for Tots also is for students to give independent gifts for children in need. December 4th through December 6th is the annual basketball and girls basketball tournament held by Les Schwab. December 8th through the 11th, every year the leadership class makes these care homes in the area more jolly by putting on the Care Home Care Cards event, where every person in the school may write a card to a fellow resident to brighten their day. And December 10th, Small Business Club, second annual winter art festival involves the entire community for public display art. And December 12th would be Food Day and upcoming events. Homecoming themes and dress-up days will be decided upon earlier in January. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mrs. Todd, Dr. Todd.
Stephanie, it's been really wonderful having you here with us this last semester. And tonight we have a plaque that we would like to give you that says thank you for your outstanding service to the Marysville Joint Unified School District Board of Trustees, serving as the MCAA student representative for the first semester of the 2014-15 school year. Your willingness to attend the board meetings to update the Board of Trustees on activities at the various school sites is greatly appreciated. I know we've all really enjoyed having you here, and thank you for your contribution to being a part of our team.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephanie. You've been great. Thank you. What's really neat is most of the time she stays for the whole meeting. Now, if it was me, I'd be out the door. Okay.
No pressure tonight, huh?
No pressure tonight. Yeah. Child Development Program, Kathy Woods. For the board, please look at special reports, page 1. Hi, Kathy.
Good evening.
How are you?
Up.
Well, I'd like to say good evening and welcome Mr. Rasmussen to the Board of Trustees. We're happy you're with us and one of the crew now, so welcome.
Thank you.
Again, my name is Kathy Woods, and I'm privileged to be able to serve as the Child Development Director for Marysville Joint Unified School District. The goals for this evening are to introduce you to the youngest clients that the Marysville Joint Unified School District serves, and to provide you with a visual glance of the world of child development that we live in. Our child development program consists of, we have approximately 552 students enrolled to date, and we have 62 employees, and of those employees, that consists of about four of our employees that are associated with our school readiness project, which is funded by First Five Yuba. As you can see, we have locations, preschool locations and school age locations scattered throughout the district and range all the way up from Yuba Feather to down to Arboga. I would like to note also that within our child development program, our total revenue or the contract, amount that we have with the State Department of Education is in the range of about $2 million, and that also includes a Title I allocation to fund a Title I preschool program that we have at Arboga Elementary School. Within the child development program, we also have approximately 90% of our students are preschool programs, which is a part-day program. We offer programs for parents that are eligible in both the morning and then afternoon sessions. 10% of our population, however, are school-age students that are actually part of a part-day program during the elementary school or during the school year, but then during the summer they evolve into a full-day program, and of course, as I mentioned, is year-round and goes through the summer. I thought that this was an interesting demographic. Our funding terms and conditions stipulate that it is a priority for us to enroll four-year-olds first, and so that's what we do. We enroll all four-year-olds. They take precedence over three-year-olds, but this year we did have 27% of our total population who actually were three-year-olds, which is quite a benefit to them, because if and then eligible the following year, then they're going to get 2 years of schooling prior to even entering the K-12 system. Our goals are quite lofty, and I have staff here that are here to kind of attest to that. But our goals are to provide the highest quality instruction in the highest quality learning environment so that our students become socially, emotionally, physically, and cognitively competent. In addition, it's not that we want, we want the whole package. We just don't want cognitive development so that they're going into the school understanding letters and sounds and have some pre-writing skills. We want students to be independent thinkers, problem solvers, investigators. And I think that's probably one of the major thrusts of our program have been over the last year, is to really try to get our students to be thinkers and so that they can navigate through the K-12 system. How do we accomplish our goals? As I stated, they are many and they are very high. Well, let me share with you what our recipe for success. Our recipe for success as it relates to accomplishing our goals are include integrated instruction and creating a daily schedule that provides a wide variety of activities for students to be able to engage in throughout the day. Integrated instruction. As I mentioned before, it is the ability to be able to infuse together the many different preschool foundations through integrated intentional instruction. All of our lessons are deliberately and purposefully planned to make sure that we integrate and lock together a variety of different foundations because there are so much to cover. I also have to note that the professional commitment of our staff to meet the needs of our students is a primary ingredient for our program's success. Without them and their commitment to this, it wouldn't be possible. I have for you here three slides with no offense to the Yankees hat on there. I thought about cropping it out, but I chose not to. But that little boy right there is a prime example of integrated instruction. You'll see that this activity probably took place in the fall when we were doing fall activities. He's got a pumpkin there, so we've dissected the pumpkin, which turns into a sensory activity. You'll see the rulers out where they're measuring the pumpkin, which is incorporating in the use of mathematics. You'll see the lenses there, the magnifying glasses that kind of morphs into science. And then we have the clipboard and the pencil where he's actually recording his observations, which helps with, again, fine motor development and language and literacy. One of the things you'll notice with the activities that you see, and you might say, oh, they're just playing. They're just putting popcorn on this letter P. Well, an example of integrated instruction would be that particular activity. That week, we're focusing on Mr. P, but we're also using a purple P because Mr. P, our character's favorite color, is purple. And you'll also notice we could have identified any object to paste on there to try to focus on the actual construction of the letter and again, fine motor development. But we choose to use popcorn because of popcorn. Again, we're trying to focus on alliteration, popcorn, P, and purple. So those are some examples of integrated instruction that you'll see in our classroom. A day in the life of a preschooler. I'd like to talk about, some of you are more familiar with our program. Some of you have actually gone on job shadows with me at our site and have got to stay an entire day. I have to tell you, they are very, very fast-paced. We hit the ground running at the very beginning of the day where we have opportunities during mealtime for students to focus on social development, knowledge of healthy foods, and fostering independence. We serve our meals family style, so you'll notice this young lady is actually using a scoop to scoop the food herself. We encourage them to open up their milks, put their own straws in there, get the spork and the napkin out of the plastic. That's a tall feat when you're 3 years old, or maybe not even turned three yet, or not even turned four. One of the priorities in the very beginning of the year, and I call them the hovercraft parent, because I was a hovercraft mom, but we have to try to pull the parents back and say, you know what, let's teach them how to open up their milk carton. Let's teach them to eat on their own and not be engaged in actually serving of the students, because we think that that's really, really important for them to be able to, again, be independent. So that's mealtime. It's not just we're feeding the kids what we have to. We see that as a learning opportunity. Students also then have a number of sessions throughout the day, two as a matter of fact, at least two, where students receive high-quality, developmentally appropriate instruction during literacy circle and board math. Literacy circle, we've talked about phonological awareness, we're reading books, talking about concepts of print. And board math, of course, I've talked to you about that before, is it's not a curriculum, it's a technique on how to teach the five domains of mathematics, and we do it every day, throughout the day. Another example of integrated instruction, as you'll notice, and it's a poor picture because I had to make it so small, but on the actual board map, you'll notice during number sense, the first column, we're not just counting any objects, we're counting E's. Well, that's because we're focusing on Miss E that week. You'll notice that in the third column where we talk about measurement, you'll notice the elephant. We're measuring how tall the elephant is and how wide the elephants are. And again, E begins with the letter E. Again, so we're trying to focus, even within the board math piece, mathematics, integrate literacy into that as well. A day in the life of a preschool also includes independently rotating between three small group activities that support our core curriculum that our teachers have designed purposely to align to the desired results, developmental profiles, and our preschool learning foundations. You'll see in this particular picture, a student's doing a pattern. Activities range from art, mathematics, science, fine motor, you name it, we get to cover it. Day in the life of a preschool also includes a substantial portion of our day where students are engaged in investigative play throughout multiple interest centers. You'll notice when you come into our classrooms, we have a number of interest centers that are throughout the classroom for kids to be able to go in and play, investigate, discover. They range from science, math, dramatic play, library. You'll see this young child is actually at a station that's set up for just one or two students, and they can independently on their own measure and weigh blocks and to determine which item is heavier. During this portion of the day, teachers are not only helping students with their investigative play, but they're in the thrust of conflict negotiation and helping students learn how to share and take turns. Again, these are our youngest of clients, and those social-emotional skills oftentimes aren't there when our kiddos get to us. Here are some examples of what we call investigative play, or what we call due time. Students work in partners, can navigate freely throughout the classroom, and staff are there to support their learning. Lastly, a portion of our day, about 30 minutes to be exact, in our preschool world, students have a chance to be able to go out and develop their gross motor skills, and again, more inventive and creative play. This year we had the privilege of writing a grant to First Five Yuba and also the Marysville Joint Educational Foundation to fund Back to Nature Discovery Centers. And what those are is centers at Kynoch and Cedar Lane, or Kynoch, Kovalad, and Kynoch. This is what our Discovery Center looks like at Linda. And it's still in the development, but really encouraging kids to be in their natural surroundings and not necessarily on that primary colored plastic play structure where kids can kind of be more creative on their own. We're really pleased with this project and are thankful for our fundees. In addition to our preschool, as I said before, we have 90% of our kiddos are part of the preschool program, but we have 10% of our students are engaged in a school-age program, which we have at the East Marysville Children's Center and Marysville Kynoch and Kovalad, respectively. We serve children who are ages 5 to 12. The difference between this program and preschool is that students have to be, the parents in these centers actually have to be working or going to school or seeking work. So there's a rigorous enrollment process to make sure that we have all the paperwork associated with that. But this parent, the feedback that we get from parents on our annual surveys is they're just so appreciative of us being able to offer full year childcare for those kids so that they can work. Our preschool, our school-age program, again, has the same goal as our preschool. Our school-age has the same goals as preschool. We want to provide enriching opportunities through access to the various interest centers. Here are some examples. Before, students can engage in their own projects, dramatic play. We do a lot of cooking. We do a lot of arts and crafts activities. We also offer, in our school-age program, homework support, and we have a gross motor component as well. This is Stormy, our resident bunny. We involve the community service outreach folks. We have the local community partners associated with our program as often as we can. Quality learning environment is also an essential element to our the success of a successful ingredient in our program. We want to maintain high standards related to the environmental rating scales. And we've developed professional partners amongst one another to kind of serve as that checks and balances to make sure that we are in compliance and also have quality. Within our program, on the Eckers rating scale, there's a range from 1 to 7. If you're anything below a 5, you're non-compliant. And we really make sure that we're hovering over in the 6 and 7 realm as often as we possibly can. Quality and learning environment. This is an example of our environments. We just want to make sure that the materials that we have for students are they're the best, and they're clean, and they're not damaged, because our children deserve it. Our clients deserve to come into an environment that's warm and inviting and welcoming. And we understand the relationship between how you set up your classroom environment and how that links to student learning and performance. So that, again, is something that we work very hard and strive to make sure we have high standards. I can't say enough about the quality, the staff that we have. This year we've worked a second year with the Youth Development Network, where we're really trying to focus on our strengths-based leadership and how we can collectively gain a better understanding of what other people bring to the table who may have different strengths and talents than us. It's been very powerful work. Our staff collectively decided to write their own mission statements, and we have framed them and posted them in our place of work in our classroom so that parents and our stakeholders understand what it is that we bring to the organization. And this happens to be an example of my mission statement that I wrote. I have it in multiple places in my office, but I truly believe that it's my responsibility to cultivate a community of lifelong learners that have a shared belief and ownership in influencing the future of our society by providing the highest quality preschool program for our youth. I will strive to inspire and empower all staff, validating the strengths and significant contributions they bring to our organization while providing powerful opportunities to reflect and grow as a professional. And down here below, these are my top five strengths. All of us have them, and it's been really important to be able to analyze our organization. This is just one slide. I have actually three sets of people here, or three different pages. I only include one, but when we take a look at the strengths that people bring to an organization, they really fall within four domains: influencing, relationship, and strategic thinkers. And it's been interesting to see where the bulk of our folks are at. And when we partner with folks on projects, it's been refreshing to be able to pull in folks that maybe not like us so that we can gain different perspectives to make sure that we have a balanced team. Again, I talked briefly about our first five YUBA partnership. We're pleased to be able to state this is our 15th year of the School Readiness Project. We provide at Cedar Lane, Linda, and Ella, and we provide weekly PAT meetings, Parents as Teacher modules with parents, monthly meetings, Raising a Reader book bag, and health screenings with the Peachtree Clinic for all of our preschoolers who are going into kindergarten. And our project is going strong. I have on the agenda for next week, actually, an extension to get our School Readiness Project funded for an additional year, which I'm hopeful will happen, come to fruition. Our parents are essential. I only have one slide of parent involvement, which is a travesty. I should have had it filled with the multiple different examples, but parents are truly partners in this process, and we really value them as being their child's first teacher, and they know their child best, and so it's important that we fold them into the work that we do. I'd like to end on this slide and just state that, we've talked about the key ingredients to success and the curriculum, learning opportunities, environments, but I think most importantly, it's our staff who are dedicated, focused, and they really believe in the work that we do. So with that, I'd like to say our doors are always open, and if you'd ever like to come and visit any of our programs, I'd be more than welcome to share them with you. And I'd also like to thank the staff that we have here today. Us. Any questions you might have? Yeah, please, staff. And family. So thank you, folks, for being here.
Thank you.
Any questions that you might have of myself or staff members here?
Board, any questions, please, for Kathy? Kathy, great job as always. Thank you.
I just have a comment.
Please.
Kathy, you're doing a great job. I've watched your career since seventh grade at Yuba Gardens. I've been in the preschool.
Did I have a career in seventh grade at Yuba Gardens?
You did. You had a good vision. You know, this year I've been able to, I had a young one in the preschool. Some of you know I've been helping a young man that was a single father at 16. She goes to the preschool, and every day she comes home and said, "Grandpa Jim, guess what we did at Linda Preschool?" And she goes through that, and she talks about Linda Preschool, and then she will say, "And I get to go to Yuba College in the afternoon." But she loves her Linda Preschool. I've heard so much about it, and you've just brought that group together as a team. You're a great leader and a great educator.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Crawford?
Yes.
Mrs. Woods, I would also like to say thank you for all the efforts that you do and commend you and your staff on going out and getting the grants that are going to actually help your program. The grants are very time-consuming, mm-hmm. but they're also going to add a lot of profit to your program. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And the grant that we have the grant extension that we have the first five YUBA, that's for the 15-16 school years in the amount of $125,000, which is big chunk. So
yes, it is.
We're appreciative of that. Thank you, Randy.
Thank you, Mr. Ransom. Any others? Thank you, Kathy. Facilities and Energy Management Update, Cynthia Jensen. Hi. Good. Someone grab the light, Sarah, or you.
All right. Good evening, Board. I apologize for my voice if it's hard to hear, but we appreciate the opportunity tonight to present on both our facilities and our energy management programs. And we're going to be doing it in tandem tonight, but I'd like to introduce, I know all of you have met her, but publicly, our new Director of Facilities and Energy Management, Cynthia Jensen. So the goal of these updates is we're going to come before the board quarterly. So the next update will be in March, and to give you really progress checks and to get your input on our overall vision and what we're doing with these programs in the district. So right now, I'm going to turn it over to Cynthia real quick, and she'll start going through our current projects as we wrap up our bond program.
Good evening, and it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me this evening. I come here from San Juan, and I hope to bring some of my experience and ingenuity to your district here and partner with all of you and your constituents to serve the students and members of this community. That said, let me go ahead and get started with the presentation. And I'm going to start with Ella, and with the current project that we have, and it is close to closeout, I'm happy to report. As of today, we have very few punch list items remaining. Believe it or not, the only thing pending on the inside of the school is the installation of seat covers. So that's been my life for about the last 3 weeks, where the seat covers, you know, the holders for those. So I've taken it to a level of detail in the project to make sure we get everything that we're paying for. On the exterior, we are currently waiting for the weather to cooperate to seal the asphalt and then stripe it. The drainage improvements include about 900 feet of trenching and a tie into the city's stormwater system, which has happened, and we're about 60% of the way through with the drainage improvements, just waiting on 3 or 4 dry days so we can get back out and finish that work. We have in-service trainings. Those are scheduled for January. Those will be complete here shortly. It'll include school site staff and our maintenance staff. If you haven't been on site, here's some pictures of the building itself. It's beautiful. I've been there 3 or 4 times at least so far, and this is it. We are on target for closeout at the end of December, which is the end of our second 90-day letter with the Department of State Architect. I believe we will meet that goal. If not, we'll reopen the project and certify it thereafter. This is a snapshot of some of the costs for the project, and this snapshot was as of October. We're providing these figures to you so it'd be consistent with the BOC update that they last received, so we're consistent in those terms. As the project wraps up, we will be bringing you updated figures with the totals when we finish. Again, 99.9% complete with the project. The figures do include hard and soft costs, just as a point of reference. Next, this is Ryan's piece.
Okay, as Ms. Jensen showed you, we're going to give you detailed information on each project. And as we go through projects, you're going to see how they evolve and how the budgets versus the revenue that we're using to pay for it and the actual expenditures come out according to budget. But before we, as we move forward, you know, a lot of these things were done before either of us are here, but we really need to evaluate what we've done as past projects and present that information to the public on everything that has been already accomplished. And as we move forward with this program, I think it's very important that we get that historical perspective. And so if you look at these past projects, this is major project by major project. Some of them are kind of lumped together. There were 2 projects or 3 smaller projects that became 1. And I can go through each of these, but I have a chart at the end, but you could see every single project that we've done under Measure H, Measure P, and then also state matching funds, because we used a lot of funding from exterior sources. And so this is all hard and soft costs for each of these projects. And it's in your packet, but I really want to pull your attention to the final chart. This really breaks it down. And this is in millions of dollars. So if you look right there, Yuba Gardens, for example, got $12.7 million. Kynox, $3.8 million down the lower right. Lyndhurst High School, $12.8 million. You can see by percentages where we've spent that money over the course of 2 bonds and all the state matching money. So some of it is what did we want to do with those bond monies, and really that comes under the strategic direction of the board and where we want to place those funds. And some of it also has to do with what are the opportunities to get that state match fund. We haven't had those opportunities in recent. But a lot of this was put into effect many years ago when the bonds were obviously approved by the voters in 2006 and 2008. And as we go out and we start evaluating what our future needs are, we really need to understand where we've been. You can see Tuella on there, just a little note on that one. It's at $1.4 million, but that doesn't include the current project. These are all past completed projects. So that will obviously jump up, I think it was $8.7 million. But this is definitely a good slide. We're going to continue to present this to people to understand where we've been since 2006. Some of it even, too, had to do with the certificates of participation as well. So as we look forward to, we want to see where's our financing. We've done a lot of things. We're closing out a bond. Where do we stand right now? Well, you can see Fund 21, which was Measure H, the first issuance in 2006, that's been expended. Fund 22, which is Measure H, the second issuance of those bonds, so the second segment of those bonds that were authorized by the voters, was issued. Bond Measure P, we still have a remaining $652,000 in that fund. And in Fund 35, the County School Facilities Fund, that's still some of the state match and other monies we received from outside sources. So you can see we have a total amount of $793,505,000 in specific restricted funds for facilities. Current encumbrances, and this is really just to close out LL and the small other projects we have, you can see it's about $173,000 in total, most of it which is, you know, fees and testing and soft costs. So if you take what we have left minus what our encumbrances are, our balance, our known balance, is $620,000 to spend on other projects as we move forward. We'll look at opportunities for additional funding as things become present. We still have some authorization under this bond, and now that we've refunded both bonds and got lower interest rates, there is some room there, but we'll have to have those discussions after we assess needs. We really need to go out there and see what do we need to do. So we'll expend the rest of this bond, and then we'll look forward to facilities and where we can address those needs as we move forward, whether it be issuance of something we've already been authorized, new bond measures, other sources of funding. And so that 622 is also subject to change, because once we finish LL, we'll get back whatever's left in the contingency. And we've added some scope to that project, such as the drainage system, because the school needs it. Otherwise, you'll have Lake Ella, which is still occurring. We're trying to fix that with the new building. So that subject to change will probably be a little bit higher once we get done. And so with that, I'll turn it back over to Cynthia, and she'll start talking about what are these current needs, what are the things we can do with that remaining money, whether it's 620 or ends up being 700,000, 750, whatever it is, what truly are our priorities as we wrap up those bond issuance dollars.
I just like to say I love facilities, and I feel like one of my greatest gifts is assessing the needs of facilities and putting together a plan for facilities so that the needs assessment flows into an update for your master plan. But that said, current needs, these are just what have surfaced recently. There's many more needs. They're not in any kind of order of priority. Some items are sort of remaining from past projects that didn't get addressed as a part of those. For instance, the two landscaping projects there. Foothill Septic, that's the leach field, needs to be replaced. We are currently getting an updated engineering study on that, and then we need some costs associated with it, so it's a matter of public health and safety. Again, these are not in any kind of order of priority. You can see we're in various stages per project design planning.
On the South Lyndhurst Portable, too, that's open to change, but that will likely fall under that one-time money we talked about from the general fund. So that's a facility need, but that's not something that might come out of the bond, because we're looking to do that with that one-time money.
Here's an extension of the current needs, and again, it's just what has surfaced so far. Sometimes I feel like I've been here a lifetime, but it's really been less than a month. So this is what we come out with, but again, they're not prioritized. That's a conversation we have internally and with the board, of course.
Well, sorry. Just to add one more thing, you know, it's really about what do you see as the priorities. Obviously, those landscaping projects were related to projects we did, but they were taken out of the scope. We did the landscaping. We added it at Ella. Do we want to do that at other places? That septic system at Foothill, it's going to fail. It's at the end of its lifespan. So we're going to have to do something. You know, is that some? And all these things we present here, it would fall under the bond language. So septic systems were included in the bond language with Measure P. But whatever you know, you look at this list, if we want to make a decision at a later date, that's fine, and we can get more specific numbers, but we wanted to present you with options. I'd also like to mention that we have two of our bond oversight committee members in the audience, Rick Teagarden and Dennis Bissell, and we really appreciate them coming out. I know I've been here for a short time as well, and both bond oversight committee meetings, they've been present along with the other members, and they're very vocal and they have great opinions, so we're always able to bring them into the discussion too, because they've been through this process for a good amount of time. So, you know, really we want to leave it kind of to the board here in terms of how we want to prioritize, at least to finish out the bond. As we move forward, we will have a master plan, as Cynthia mentioned, that will really take into account and have a broader input session in terms of all the stakeholders in the district.
Okay, this is that current project that's moving forward. I have some milestones at the bottom of the slide. We recently finished the bidding process, and that had closed on the 2nd. We'll be seeking board approval of those contract documents on the 18th. We're starting a pre-construction meeting on the same day as well, just to coordinate that project so we can move it forward as quickly as possible thereafter. You see the completion date is estimated this spring. Hopefully we'll come in above that, but we'll keep you posted. You'll see the school sites there and additional information about the number of cameras and so on. And this is a non-bond funded project. Additional projects that have also surfaced recently. These are not in any kind of order of priority. You'll see where we're at in terms of the stage of design or construction, what source of funding we're contemplating. Some are pending. At the bottom, you'll see we have a 5-year deferred maintenance plan is in progress. I've been working closely with the director of maintenance, and we've actually started to update and create a 5-year plan. It'll be very detailed. It'll be district-wide in terms of things that would apply district-wide, like a natural gas leak detection study, maybe an arc flash study, things of that nature, which would be applicable to district, and then we'll go site by site. So it'll be very comprehensive, and that'll be a matter of prioritizing the projects based on fire life safety or other priorities, and also putting a funding source to each item, what we feel would be the best source, like Prop 39 clean energy funds. I'll go into more detail on that in just a second. Okay, so in terms of 5-year deferred maintenance plan, you'll see the master planning, our facility needs assessment really is the boots on the ground. You're at the site, you're looking at panels, you're on the roof, you look at the, you know, the nature of each item, and then you put together, it includes just almost anything at all, parking lots, striping, fire life safety, anything you can think of, PA systems, and it all goes into the needs assessment, and then from there into the facilities master plan, and then hopefully from there prioritized. You'll see that the deferred maintenance budget, which is included in the LCAP, includes approximately $120,000 per year, and facilities is going to manage projects that are $15,000 or more, whereas maintenance staff will do projects that are $1,499 or less, generally speaking. Okay, on to energy management. Energy management is really a process. The way I see it, it's coming up with a plan. It's comprehensive. It's district-wide. It considers safety. You put in place guidelines, policies, site audit procedures, shutdown procedures, and you really have a comprehensive plan that you put into draft stage and you vet it fully with your constituents and stakeholders before implementation. It includes a piece of behavior modification. If your air conditioning is on, shut your door. turning off your thermostat, it just really varies widely. Once the program's up and running, you share the savings and conservation results anywhere from natural gas, therms, kilowatts, water, pretty much any kind of natural resource. Can include trash and recyclable services if you track that to become green. Training, it includes a lot of training for both the maintenance staff and the school site staff. It includes a portion of irrigation controls and really tightening down your control systems, so that you're running efficiently and according to regulations.
I'd just like to add on the energy management portion. Both Cynthia and myself came from districts that had an energy management program. And the reason they've been successful is utilities are your highest expense outside of your people expense, obviously people's big percentage of the budget. But right after that is utilities, and they're constantly increasing. So, you know, water, gas, and obviously electricity. And so you look for opportunities to save money because there's things we do in our behavior that we don't do. You know, turn off the light. It might not seem like a lot, but it does add up if people turn off lights. We have air conditioning running when people are not there, in the summer when people are not there. It's understanding your equipment, working with the staff, the custodial staff, for example, on site, to understand when their equipment and when to put on timers and when to turn it off and what to check for before they leave from the building. These things in small amounts seem small, but accumulated in a district our size with 24 different sites, it adds up very quickly, and it could save you hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's why it's something that we're trying to bring, and we need to continue to develop and see what's the best plan to institute this energy management program.
With the position of an energy manager slash Prop 39 project manager and a site safety person, we feel that these are the items that this person could assist the district in completing. We'd save a lot of money in terms of utilities. We'd avoid spending that money on those items. We could do even more lighting retrofits with incentives. We could get grants from the Regional Water District. We could have them manage projects that includes the smaller scope stuff like lighting retrofits, controls for lighting in HVAC, replacement of barred units, let's say on portables, and other small scope projects, along with meeting the guidelines for Prop 39 Clean Energy Act. They are doable but tedious. It includes both the project portion and then at the end a verification process that you've met the goals in savings that you set out to. And then a little bit about the funding. So far we've applied for about $115,000 in planning funds. We have a remaining amount of $444,000. That's just for year one, and it is a five-year program. This is a little bit about how our energy person might assist in our efficiency in providing the sites while they're there, doing energy audits with some safety components, safety training, equipment, and supplies. You can read in detail what we thought those would look like, evacuation maps, training on how to use the evacuation map, maybe fire-related safety training, visitor map, ADA path of travel, simulations, lockdowns, active shooters, and what have you.
Mm-hmm. So we do have some measures in place. We obviously have emergency plans. Student attendance and discipline office is doing a great job. And it's in combination. You know, student services handles a lot of the health services that can, you know, obviously the health and safety of our students. Maintenance and operations department as a whole from transportation, all of them together from an operational standpoint, school site staff and administration, local law enforcement, everybody's playing a part. The key is to have a comprehensive program. We want to make sure that we're providing everybody with the training and the background so that when something happens on our campuses, not only are we prepared, we're prepared in the best way possible that will minimize any damage. We also have the equipment and supplies, and people know how to use them. We just want to take it to the next level. And we see by somebody being out at the sites a lot on the energy side, there's an opportunity there to really focus on student safety and really tie all these ends that we're working on together and take it, again, like I said, to the utmost level so that we're ultimately prepared for anything that comes in terms of safety on our campuses.
This slide represents some of my duties. While the list seems short, it could be far longer. Each of these items represents very specific expertise and a level of regulation that must be met. I'd be happy to answer any questions on this slide, if you have any. So what do we still need? An energy slash safety manager who could handle all the duties that we had previously discussed on the three slides. The position can be funded out of some of the dollars set aside in the LCAP, as shown there, $98,000. We don't need the compliance auditor. Plus, we can use up to $44,000 $1 million per year, give or take, over the five-year period to fund the position, not to mention the reduced cost in utilities that we could put toward other projects and items for the district. And that's all. Any questions?
And just to be clear, kind of the direction, the key takeaways we're taking away is what you want us to do with the remaining facility funding before we get to the master planning, that we will bring you the deferred maintenance plan in March. We're looking to round out the facilities and energy management by adding that energy management piece along with safety, but we're really looking for direction on those items from you and kind of just your overall feeling about where we're headed.
Well, just on the energy compliance alone, it's so long overdue. If you can accomplish that, I think the monetary rewards are going to be tremendous. I wouldn't want to do the job, but if you can get that done, I can really see us, because I see the waste. I've been part of it with the lights. And like you said, you could come here in July and find a lot of buildings with air conditionings on because it's left on automatically. So good luck. Thank you. Questions? Board?
Just comment.
Very thorough.
Well, welcome to the district. I see such a difference in the transparency with the two of you and what you're doing. I do have a question on the deferred maintenance. I saw you had PA systems in there, mm-hmm. and I mentioned it to Ryan. I was at a couple events, and the sound was so terrible, especially at Kovalot. The parents around me mentioned they couldn't hear anything. And it kind of takes away from things the schools are doing. And we had talked about that, and I see it's in deferred maintenance. Also, a concern I have is the bus loop at Lyndhurst, and I've talked to Scott several times about it over the years. I've been out there, and they've got 13 buses that come in there, and the kids have no barriers to hold them back. And I've personally been out there and seen kids push as buses come in, and it's a very dangerous situation. I would hope you would look at that, put some kind of a barrier there, because it's just waiting for an accident waiting to happen.
So, for example, on the PA systems, that would be something that's ideal for deferred maintenance. You know, that's all your major systems, like your flooring, heating, ventilation, air conditioning, roofing, PA, you know, public announcement systems. We'll look at all those things, and that's why we're going to bring you a tentative plan in March. And again, those are every year we have $820,000. We need to look at those systems. So even if it's not done in year one, we're going to have a five-year rolling plan, and that will be rolled up ultimately into a bigger facility master plan. And that will cover certain items, too. We talk about the bus loop. If you just want to repair and replace it, we're already working on that. We're going to draft RP. It will be done in the summer. But in terms of adding extra thing, that becomes a different kind of facility project. That's not just maintaining it or repairing and replacing. You're adding new sites. We could do things like that. I mean, we're doing some stuff there. You know, that kind of goes back to the direction we want from the board. If you think the energy safety manager is a good idea, if you would like us to move forward on some of the items to close out the bond, you know, we'd like to know kind of the strategic direction you want us to go with that. You know, some things I think are mandatory. You know, if we're to operate Foothill, we're going to need to replace the septic system. It's going to have to happen. Some things become a little optional, but, you know, we build a new building at Oliver's, but then we have a dead field in front of that. You know, so it's really, we want direction there. We want direction. You know, because we really want to do energy management, we need to put the resources behind it. We have the resources reserved. It's not taking anything additional than what's already budgeted. And, you know, we have that money remaining as a bond. What is your, you know, what would you like us to focus on? So any direction, comments, I would really appreciate
it. And I would like to suggest that a board study session would be a good venue in which to do that. We can lay out all of the identified needs at the moment, and we can prioritize them at that time. I don't know that the board's ready to make that kind of decision tonight, but certainly we can have a lengthy discussion. We'll give Cynthia maybe a couple more weeks.
Well,
under her belt.
January
and,
or?
And so sometime in January would probably be a good time with the first of the year and kind of see what's still out there, what needs to be done, and move forward if that's the board's pleasure.
We can get some preliminary budget numbers, too, and update kind of what we believe the contingency will be, so what the remaining fund will be. So
yeah, I think that for some of those identified projects, having a dollar amount there, an estimated, will help the board make a decision as to how many of those things they can do and create a priority list.
Yeah, on the Foothill site, has there been any groundwork done at all, testing of the ground? in any place because there's a lot of naturally occurring asbestos in that area, and I think we might run into huge issues. I mean, it's got to be addressed, but depending on what we're going to end up, you know, bringing up out of the surface, how we're going to mitigate that.
We met with the original engineer that worked on the project when they were going to expand the site to possibly be the high school. It depends on capacity. So to replace and kind of do what we have, she has all the studies, so she can incorporate that into our plan. It's still going to be, you know, it's going to eat up a considerable amount of the rest of the bond money, but we do have that. And there is naturally occurring asbestos, but there's ways to mitigate that that really aren't, it's not, the kind of measures you have to take is not as cost, I guess, occurring as you would think. Yeah, I mean, it's different when you're changing capacity because they have a system there. It worked, but it's at the end of its life. And so there's other places they already studied the soil, so there's other places we would run it and put the leach field somewhere else. And there's a way to build that system, similar to what I think they did at Loma Rica and Dobbins, just a little bit bigger because of the capacity there. And, yeah, you'll have to take some measures with the naturally occurring asbestos, but this is just as much about not getting things in the air, which you can do with, you know, water and other methods. So it can be done. And we do have the same engineer that did all that work on board.
Are you also looking for direction on your energy management position at
this
point in time?
If possible. If not, we can move it. But,
Is that something the board's comfortable giving a nod of the head to tonight, or is that something you'd like to wait and discuss
I would
later?
Rather wait and look at it during a study session
study session,
we can put some numbers to it and see what it's going to cost the district, what the ongoing funding is going to look like.
Maybe we could throw it around that special meeting?
Yes. We can we'll put that on the agenda.
Okay. And we'll focus on those two.
December 18th? That.
No. This will be in January.
January. Okay.
We're going to do that next year, 2015.
Any other questions, board? Thank you very
much.
Thank you. Excellent presentation.
Very good.
Okay. As required by law, election code 15400. These are the results from the 11-4-14 election. Trustee area number 3. The grand total results. The registration was 7,822 registered voters. Ballots cast, 3,204 votes. Turnout was 40.96. Mr. Randy Rasmussen received 1,522 votes. Mr. Philip Miller received 548 votes, making Mr. Rasmussen the obvious winner. Congratulations, Mr. Rasmussen, and welcome. The annual board, or the board, took action at the 11-18 meeting that the organizational meeting would be held on 12-9. The law requires the board elect a president and clerk from its members. The board should also elect a vice president and trustee rep to this special ed council. The superintendent will now preside over the election of the president. The new president presides over the remaining election and assumes responsibility of the meeting at that time. Dr. Todd.
Thank you. Just as a reminder, the process for nomination, since we do this once a year, it's nice to have a little reminder. So, first of all, there is not a second to nominate a person to stand for election. After each nomination, the board member nominated will be asked if they accept or decline. A motion is not made to close the nominations. And after all the nominations have been made and the person nominated accepts or declines the nomination, then a motion for the first nominated candidate will take place. Please remember that the first candidate who receives the majority vote in the affirmative is elected to the position. So if we have multiple nominations, make sure that you reserve your vote for the one you truly want to be elected president. There are no further votes once we have a majority vote for a candidate, and we will not take any action on any of the other nominations. So we'll begin with the election of president, and I will open the floor for nominations for president. Mr. Harris nominates Mr. Bernie Rex, do you accept or decline the nomination?
Well, I will accept.
Okay, thank you. Any other nominations?
I would like to nominate Mr. Crawford. He's done a good job this year, and I'd like to see it continued another year.
Mr. Fleury has nominated Frank Crawford. Do you accept or decline?
I accept.
Any others? With that being the end of the nominations, we'll move with the first nominated, which is Mr. Rex. He has been nominated to serve as president. Do I have a motion for Mr. Rex to become the president of the board?
I'll make a motion that Mr. Rex be president of the board.
Do I have a second to the motion? It's moved and seconded that Mr. Rex serve as president of the board. Those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Maybe I'll need you to raise your hands because I can't see all of you at once. So I have Mr. Boom with a yes, Mr. Rasmussen with a yes, Mr. Rex with a yes, Mr. Danable with a yes, and Mr. Harris. And Mr. Crawford votes yes. All those opposed say no.
I will vote also to make it unanimous.
Oh, well, okay. Mr. Fleury is a yes vote for Mr. Rex. Since the motion carries unanimously, Mr. Rex, Mr. President Rex, will please move over one seat and please take over for the remaining election of officers.
First, I'd like to say that I'm very humbled and honored to have received the support of the board members. And that goes for all six. Yeah, I really appreciate it. Okay. Moving on, we are responsible for electing a vice president. For vice president, would any of the board members care to make a nomination for vice president?
I'd like to nominate Mr. Harris.
Okay, Mr. Harris is nominated. Do you accept it?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Harris accepts. Are there any other nominations? I don't think that's going to come to a vote. Well, okay. All those in favor of Mr. Harris being vice president of the board?
You have to have a motion.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Okay, we need a motion to accept Mr. Harris as a vice presidential candidate. Okay. The motion was by Mr. Danable. Is there a second?
I second that.
Randy Rasmussen,
coach,
seconded by Mr. Rasmussen. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So that's seven.
Can we see a show of hands? Just so we can. That's a unanimous vote.
Okay. That brings us to clerk of the board. Is there anyone who would like to make a nomination for clerk?
I'd like to nominate Mr. James Fleury.
Mr. Fleury, do you accept? Okay, is there any other nominations for clerk? If there are no other nominations, then we need a motion to accept Mr. Fleury. Okay, nominated by or moved by Mr. Harris. Okay, is there a second? Okay, Mr. Danable, second. And as before, let's take a vote. All those in favor of Mr. Fleury being clerk, please raise your hands. And that was unanimous. I'm sorry. Got to keep good records here. Okay, then the next is a trustee representative to the Special Education Council. Mr. Crawford, do you accept?
Yes.
Okay, accepted. Okay. Anybody else that would like to make a nomination?
Okay. Actually, I have served. Danable, would you like to serve with that? I'll nominate you.
Okay, Mr. Danable, do you accept? All right. Mr. Crawford, you were the first nominee.
And I decline it, and I will make the motion to accept Mr. Danable.
So now you're declining the nomination. Okay, Danable has been nominated for this position of trustee. Would somebody care to nominate, make a motion, and a second?
We already had a motion by Mr. Crawford.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
So second.
Second? Okay, and all those in favor, please raise your hands. I think that was unanimous. All right, we need to set a time and date and place for our regular meetings, and it's laid out in the agenda, the schedule as stated there, with canceled meetings listed. Is there someone that would like to make a motion to accept? Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, second. Second by Mr. Crawford. Okay. And all those in favor, please raise your hands. Any dissension? Okay. And now we need to appoint the superintendent as secretary to the Board of Trustees. Would somebody like to make that motion?
I'll make a motion to appoint the superintendent as secretary to the Board of Trustees.
Moved by Mr. Boom. Is there a second? Mr. Fleury seconds it. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye. That'll save us raising our hands all the time, I guess.
All
right.
All seven do it, it's fine.
Okay. Next item of business is to authorize the superintendent and designees to sign warrants, contracts, and other documents. And it's listed in special reports, page 5-8. Is there a motion? Someone care to make a motion to authorize the superintendent and designees? Okay, Mr. Harris makes the motion. Okay, is there a second? Seconded by Mr. Danable. All those in favor, please raise your hands. That's unanimous. Okay. Comments from board members. Mr. Boom.
Mr. Crawford, thank you for leading us last year. Thank you for, being the president of the board. I know that it takes a lot of extra time. And so thank you for your efforts there. And just wish everybody happy holidays, Merry Christmas, and everybody be safe.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Rasmussen.
I would just like to tell everybody how excited and proud that I am to be able to be supporting our families in our Marysville district. Been with the Marysville district most of my life, not only as a student but as an employee. So I'm very honored now to be able to be sitting here and helping our families and our children to be the best educated they can. I would also like to thank all the folks that supported me throughout my campaign efforts. My biggest campaign or my biggest supporter during my campaign. How much time do I have, Mr. Rex?
Oh. This is your day. You go ahead.
My biggest supporter I'd like to thank is my wife, Lydia. A little story I'd like to tell you. It was a Saturday, August 16th, 2014. We found ourselves in a campaign booth on Oliverst Avenue at the Oliverst Car Show, which is a very nice event. The other event that was happening that day was our 34th wedding anniversary. So, thank you, dear.
Okay, Mr. Flurry.
I also would like to thank Mr. Crawford for his year of service. I know it takes a lot of time, effort, and energy, and I know he worked very hard to do a good job. I also would like to welcome Mr. Rasmussen to the board. I think he's going to be a good addition. During the lap before Thanksgiving, I went to several events, schools. Covalon had a great event, brought a lot of parents were in there. And then at Linda, there was four board members, I think Mr. Harris, Mr. Rex, Mr. Crawford, and myself, and Mr. Carrion at the, what they call it, PQ? PK. And it was very... see the excitement in the parents and the enthusiasm of the crowd when these parents, they were given a chance to make sure their kids are going to have an education. And it was a very memorial event. I enjoyed it, and I will not forget it because I got in an accident right after I left Cedar Lane on the way home. My car is still in the shop. Also, I went to Linda, just happened to drop by, and I've been to many, many assemblies as all of you have over the years. But this one had total involvement from all of the staff, from all of the kids, and all of the parents in there. And I wrote something up I would like to read to you to kind of give you the flavor of what it was. Three times a year, Linda School has a tremendous trimester rally with a different theme. The first rally of this year was held on November 19th. The theme of this rally was "I Just Made Honor Roll. Can you dig it?" Staff members dressed up in disco and 70 outfits. Every staff member was involved. Music from this area was played throughout the rally in addition to other popular songs. The rally ended with the staff taking a lap around the cafeteria with the kids cheering the adults on. Each time an award was given, the students would line up, take a lap around the cafeteria with music playing and staff members giving high fives to students. There was a lot of enthusiasm and excitement on everyone's part. A different teacher would announce an award. The awards that were given out were Math Maniac, Rockin' Reader, Science Wizard, PE Phenomenon, Improvement Award, Achievement Award, Lion Pride Award, Gold and Silver Honor Award based on the GPA. The goal at Linda is that every student earns an award at each rally. There was also a competition for the most spirited class. Several times throughout the rally, each class was asked to do the spirit class. The clap with the most enthusiasm and excitement won at the end of the rally, and they would get to sit front at the next trimester rally. During the rally, there is also a code word they used, and the word was school. When the students heard that, they would sing out, "Can you dig it?" The students that earned a bronze, silver, or gold gold card were wearing the special rally T-shirts, which were given. The rally ended with all the parents involved, and they went around for a lap. And the rally just really demonstrated a commitment and student-focused staff that they worked together. And I was amazed that everyone was involved, and they worked together. And Judy Hart really has a team out there. So congratulations to Linda for that.
Well, 30 years ago when I was coaching wrestling with this guy, the farthest thing from my mind, and I'm sure his mind, would both be sitting up here. But it's indeed an honor. It's going to be a lot of fun, too. I've known Lydia and Randy for, it seems like, forever. They've got some great boys, great family. They live out in Arboga, and I don't think I've ever seen quite an election, Randy. It's really, really tremendous, man. You should be proud. And as far as serving the president, this last year is my privilege. Thank you all.
And this is a little different since it's Miss Stephanie's last board meeting. Would you like to make a comment?
Thank you for having me. I really do appreciate this experience. I absolutely loved it. And I just want to wish you guys a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Harris? Mr. Danimal? Randy, welcome again. It's interesting to you're going to have an interesting experience, educational experience, I'm sure. Just a couple of things. I really enjoyed the mission statement. Okay, that you gave, and it was really kind of a solidarity of the department. But something struck me just as the meeting opened, and I saw the flag waving on the screen, and I was reminded of a scene that I saw on TV just a few days ago, December 7th, and it showed four living members of the Arizona tragedy in 1941, four of the nine survivors left alive. And this is the 63rd anniversary of that. And I was really impressed with that because today we need to give credit to the service of our veterans and our soldiers remembering that day helps us carry on the heritage of American citizenship, and I just thought it was really I really enjoyed seeing the flag on the screen and how important it was. That's it.
And that thank you can go to Mr. Danibal. It was his idea to do that, and so we're very pleased that you liked it.
Okay, opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association.
Good evening. I don't have this, sorry, Mr. Fullery, and multiple copies. I don't even have it typed. It's just some scratch I was doing with my pen, since it took a while to get to this point today. But it's some information that I'd like to share with you. And it's in regard to teacher salary and health benefits. Over the last several years, since the data that I'm looking at that I'm going to share with you is from 2009-10 through today, the cost for health insurance has continued to increase, and I know that there are some people who don't really see how that affects teachers, how that affects your staff, employees at this district. So I just wanted to point out a couple of significant numbers. In 2009-10, if you take a middle of the pay scale person, after taking out the cost of their health benefits, they were getting paid $51,984 in a year. They were paying 21% of their salary toward health. This year, the same person at the same step is taking home $44,828. So from $51,900 to $44,800 from 2009 to 2014. They've had a decrease in salary of 9%. They were paying 21% of their salary toward health insurance. Today they paid 33% of their salary. And that does include the 2% increase is included in that. So had we not had that 2%, it would be more. Board members who receive health insurance, I'm not sure you know how much the district pays for that. But so that you do know, every month this year, the district is paying $1,861 a month, tax-free to you, for you. And if you look at what they paid in 2009-2010, and how it's changed to today, they are now paying an increase of 61.4% of what they were paying you. One other piece of information that I thought you should know, because I do remember that this board, during the bad financial times, has talked about when things start getting better again, you want to first get rid of the cuts. First, bring back people that were let go, programs that were cut. And I've seen, because I on district mail, I get the job announcements for classified after classified after classified people, so I believe that that's what you're doing. Please don't forget that when all this mess started, we had 65 more teachers than we do today. The work is still there, but it's being spread out among much fewer teachers. That's it. Thank you. And I'll get it typed up in a way that I can hand it out to you next time.
Operating Engineers, Local Union 3. California School Employees Association 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees. Supervisory Unit. Okay, I have one public comment card. Gerald Wallace, I think he may have stepped out. Says Linda School. Topic is Linda School. And that brings us to Superintendent's.
Thank you very much. If you've been watching the weather reports, you know that Thursday it's projected to be a little nasty out there. Not only are we going to, I think, get all of the rain we lost out on last year in one single day, it looks as if the winds are going to be kind of whipping through here. So we are right now in the process of canceling a number of events that would cause folks to have to come out, one of which is the Common Core Parent Night at Yuba Gardens. That has been canceled. That's Thursday night. We'll reschedule that for a later date. We are still working to determine. We'll kind of take it probably early tomorrow afternoon as to whether we will cancel the budget and LCAP meeting, because that, once again, we'll be asking folks to come out. And for our after-school activities, we are going to limit those greatly, so we'll be canceling some practices. The STARS program at the elementary will continue to be in school, as it were, and if power goes out, Ashley Vetti, the coordinator for that program, has sent notices home with all of the parents today, letting them know that they may be getting a call to come pick their students up. We will not be transporting the middle school children, so if parents want to come pick their students up, they certainly can do that. We are not going to allow them to walk home or ride their bikes. You know, with gusts of winds from 60 to 70 miles an hour, it's just not a real safe environment to be sending students home, especially at 6 o'clock when you know it's dark now. So we are taking it very seriously, and we have a meeting tomorrow with Mr. Cena, because he has a tournament that's taking place and multiple schools coming, so we want to make sure we are aware of what's going on and trying to be as thoughtful as possible about keeping our students and parents safe in this weather. So school will be in session. Buses will be running their regular schedules, but certainly we're going to keep a close eye as that storm kind of really kicks up later tomorrow, Thursday, excuse me. So the other thing that I have for you tonight is Danae White. She's a second-year teacher at Marysville High School. Recently had her freshman English class complete a Common Core writing assessment, and she did assignment. She did that while the WASC committee was here, and I'm not sure she got quite the recognition for the efforts that her students put forth, trying to really be very thoughtful about some changes they'd like to see at Marysville High School and perhaps some growth opportunities. And so she has delivered those essays to me, and I have copies for the board members, and I would encourage you to read through those. I will be putting together a response for her class, and if you have some thoughts or ideas you'd like to have included, please just let me know, and I would be more than happy to include those. But a very thoughtful endeavor and truly taking Common Core to the next level, where working as a group and talking about what are the issues, what are some ways of resolving those, and bringing forward research to back it. I mean, it's the whole gamut, so a really wonderful assignment. So please enjoy the read, and you will have a few weeks to do that. So enjoy that, and I want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and a happy holiday, and thank you for another wonderful year.
Well, it's certainly good, because I never thought we'd have enough to read while we were going to be off. That's okay. Okay, and this brings us to approval of the minutes from the last regular board meeting in 11-18-14. Mr. Rasmussen, you can't vote for this. Okay. Any addition or changes to the minutes? If there's no addition or changes, we entertain a motion. Okay, there's a motion by Mr. Danable. Is there a second? Okay, it's been moved and seconded to accept the minutes from the last meeting. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any nays? One abstention. The consent agenda. Would anybody like anything pulled from the consent agenda?
I'd like to have this item number two off of educational services pulled, please.
Item number two, educational services, overnight field trip MCAA. Okay, any other items? I'd like to pull number one, item number one of educational services. Mr. Danable.
Do you want to take a motion on all of the other?
Oh, that's, yeah, let's do that now. All, yeah, if there, is there a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, and that brings us back to Mr. Danable, number two.
Last month, we approved for MCAA a trip in April for 130 students to be going down to Disneyland to take some classes, I guess. Now, on this agenda item, if we take a look at it, it says that we request the board approve Marysville Charter Academy for the Arts for an overnight field trip to Disneyland. My question is, are we authorizing the rest of the academy now to go to Disneyland? And I guess the real question is, are we like, is Mr. Malone kind of like relocating us in Disneyland? So,
Lenny Tate is here, and she'll be happy to explain to you why they are requesting to go to Disneyland.
Hi. You have different department groups going. So you have your dance department, you have your choir department that are all going down there for this music expression institute that they're doing down there, where they're not only learning, but they'll also be performing. So this is a different department that's going down this
time. Okay, so I happened to look up this competition that we discussed last month, MCA going down to, and I did not see any competition. I saw some classes that the kids could take, right? But I did not see any competition. Now we're sending kids away again, and we're using the reason for creative expression.
Well, they are a performing arts school, and this is one of the venues in which they annually go down. Well, I don't know if it's annually, but they go down regularly to this specific event where they perform, mm-hmm. and they do get to work with other members of the choir, band, whatever the specific agenda is. It is a very well-structured time, and it is, they believe, it's of great educational benefit to their students.
Are we talking about the Main Street Band here?
Any band that Disneyland has, but they do perform in the courtyard.
At a high price, though, we're gonna cover those energy bills.
Yeah, many years ago, I happened to be down there, and there was
Creative Expression Week.
They do perform, and it is quite an honor to be selected to go down and to participate in this event. So.
And with your interest, what I might do is I might talk to Marysville Charter to see if they could come in, or maybe perhaps in their school presentation that they do for the board, they could speak to what they do when they do go down to Anaheim for that. Thank you.
And I just checked, we do not lose any ADA. That's a school function, so it doesn't hurt the district that way. I pulled educational services number. Let's do item number two first. Okay. Is there a motion to accept item number two?
I'll make the motion.
Okay. Mr. Danable moves to accept number two. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded that the overnight field trip for the MCAA be approved. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Educational services number one. I was intrigued by this because of the cost, and there's a sentence in there that in the item that said both content knowledge and language skills in ways that are proven to be more effective for ELLs. So I got on my computer and did a little research and looked up the organization. As far as proven, I found 1 minute, 30 second endorsement by a student and one statistic that said in a group, the majority of students reached level 3.12 and passed the test. But I said that was the average of the test. So it didn't say how many kids passed and didn't pass. And I've really found in going through that, marking things up, that as a statement, I have not been endorsing Common Core for a long time, but we're going to spend a lot of money on these this training, and perhaps it would be better used in some other area.
I understand the Common Core piece. SIAP has been around before the Common Core. We actually have it in our Title III action plan. We had a training about 6 or 7 years ago, and this is a repeat for our folks that have never received sheltered instruction observation protocol training. It's all tied to instructional strategies and lesson planning. It's based around 8 components that tie to the lesson, tie to evidence and progress accountability. And I'm sorry, I was going to pull up the research page. There's multiple studies that they've done in varieties of areas throughout the United States on this training. It's actually something that comes through the Cal State system and Long Beach. The three doctors are through that. 1 second. I'm not sure if this is going to help answer any of those questions or if I can answer a direct question. There is, I could pull up quite a lot of research on sheltered instruction observation protocol.
But it is a research-based program.
Oh, it's the most, from everything that we've looked at, it is, and that's why we were actually directed through, when we were doing our Title III action plan with CDE, and we worked with Sacramento County Office of Education to do it. It is probably the most researched and test study validated program where they're still doing it. I think the most recent study was just in 2012. And I'm not sure which website you might have pulled up. There's Pearson, which has SIAP, but Pearson's program builds off of the Cal State program. So the research is integrated between both parties for that, for the SIAP itself. So would you like me to pull up any of the research for you or maybe
no,
get that to you?
I'm looking at the agreement right now, and once it's signed, we're tied into this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Luckily, my signature is not going to go on it. It's going to be Ryan's signature there that's going to go on this. But I hesitate. I know that my philosophy is I really am against federal and influence on the education. I like the diversity of the system that has proven effective over the years. And I know I can't change it, but I'm still going to be a voice for it. So,
I'd also like to add that this is a program that utilizes specific strategies that the teachers are seeing great results with. They feel very comfortable working with their students, and they can cite examples for you of how it does improve their instruction working with second language learner students. And if Mr. DiGiulio wasn't going to sign the agreement, I certainly would have no reservations doing it either. So it is a research-based program. It's supported by our district teachers, and certainly I believe in it wholeheartedly.
No, I understand that.
I'm not sure. It's not a federal program. SIAP is not a federal program, and it's not tied to Common Core. However, it absolutely can be used in tandem using whichever strategies or standards, educational standard you're using. It's about lesson plan building.
The one thing we can all agree on is we all want the best for the kids. So if one of the things about being human is I can be wrong. So this might be absolutely the right thing to do. It's just I haven't seen that. I haven't been enlightened yet, I guess.
I encourage you to attend with us. It's the last week of our Christmas break. I know you've attended with us before. It's not during instructional time, and I know we'd be really excited to have you there.
And I'll try to make those.
Even a little bit. We'll just see you.
Well, I'm on your list. Yeah. Okay, I get your emails.
Okay.
That's all I had to say. If there's no other comments on this, then I'll entertain a motion for approval. Okay, Mr. Fleury, is there a second? Okay, Mr. Danable. Okay, all those in favor, please raise your hands. Okay, opposed? 1. Okay. That brings us to new business. Is there any? Goes right to, I would say, Ryan. Okay, facilities and energy management, revised master agreement.
We're just trying to tighten up the language in the contract, so it gives us some of our proprietary rights, such as our computer-aided design drawings and some other formatting issues, as well as making the progressive payment over the course of the project more match actually what's being done, with a little more weight on the back end so that we close out projects in an expedient fashion.
Okay.
And so Williams & Patton has worked on various projects. They're the first one that we've done this because we're entering into a new project with them. So as we move forward, any architectural firm that we work with will be required to sign this new template.
Okay. Any comments on this? Okay. If there are no comments, I'll entertain a motion for facilities and energy management under new business revised master agreement.
I'll make the motion.
Okay. Motion by Mr. Danable. Second?
I'll second.
Okay.
Mr. Crawford.
All those in favor, please raise your hands. Okay. Unanimous. Okay. Item 2, project authorization number 16, architectural services with Williams and Patton Architects, Planners, and Company.
So this is a project authorization that would fall under the contract that was just approved. We waited a little bit in bringing this to the board because we wanted to get that contract master agreement in place. But they've already been doing preliminary design, and the goal is to install a shade structure at Lyndhurst High School during spring break is our anticipated installation time.
The only comment I had on this was it's $14,800 and it doesn't touch the construction. It's just oversight.
Yeah, some of those costs are sunk costs when you get involved in any project. It does require DSA approval, but the total budget it is is about $50,000, roughly $50,000.
Okay, if there's no other comments.
Is it metal or is it wood, metal, or what?
It's like an aluminum.
Okay, good. So it'll at least last a long time.
Is it like the one out here at Marysville?
Yeah, and the one at South Lyndhurst there on the same campus, they have that one. It's about 20 by 40. You know, it should be beige and red. We've been working with Mr. Eckhart to get pretty much what they need there because they have a cafeteria that's pretty nice, but it's not big, so this will allow more shaded seating for the students. And it should be durable and last a long time. Unless the wind gusts. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, it should be fine.
And that is why when people bring forward ideas, a lot of them are wonderful ideas. It's just the cost associated with building structures in a school setting that have to meet very rigorous construction requirements. Yeah. So that, unfortunately, increases the cost of the project.
Yeah, and as you have those smaller projects, your percentage of soft costs usually go up because there's some costs just getting involved. You obviously have the DSA approval process, any outside engineering. And whenever you do something like that, you have to analyze your American Disabilities Act access. So you have to have a pathway of travel to that structure or whatever you're building. So there's a lot of considerations you have to have, too, because it's a public. And even though you might have something that you didn't have to look at that before, once you open that can of worms, and you have to make sure you cover all your bases.
Okay, if there's no further discussion, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Okay, item 2 under facilities and management. Motion by Mr. Harris.
Second.
Second by Mr. Danable. Okay, all those in favor, please raise your hands. Okay, 7. Okay, unanimous. Next item is under Personnel Services, a tentative agreement with AMACE. Mr.
Yeah, thank you. Good evening. The item before us is the first of what I hope are several tentative agreements with the employee groups. This one is with the Association of Management Confidential Employees as parties reach an agreement on a salary increase for all classifications within AMACE to the tune of 3.0%. The tentative agreement also includes a reopener provision and, if approved, is retroactive to July 1 of 2014. Recommend the board approve the tentative agreement as presented.
Hey, any discussion on this item? Okay, if not, I'll entertain a motion. Tentative agreement with AMACE. Okay. Mr. Danable makes motion to accept. Second? Ms. Fleury? All those in favor, please raise your hands. Seven yes. And that brings us to business services. Number one, 2014-15 first interim budget.
Thank you, Mr. Rex and the board. You have the extensive packet that has the executive summary and all the standardized account code structure forms. So, you know, as you have questions beyond this date, please contact me at any time. I'm just going to give you the brief highlights of the first interim and then open it up to questions, but feel free to ask the questions at any time. I continually bring this chart because I like to remind people that the budget process is ongoing all the time and it's constantly in movement, and we do the same thing every year, and it's in motion, and there's changes. So right now, we started the year with an LCAP and an adopted budget in 14-15. In September, remember, we actually looked at the 13-14 budget and closed that as final because we had the estimated actual, not the estimated, but, well, the unaudited actuals. And then now we're well into 14-15, almost halfway through the school year, or our fiscal year, which is starts July 1st and goes through June 30th. And we're at first interim financial report. So this is our first snapshot of the year, and it shows you through October 31st. January, I'll have an update at the January 27th board meeting, talk about what the governor's state budget proposal is and what the impact will be, not only on education, but on our district specifically. So we'll already be starting that process towards 15-16 budget. And then we'll go through the rest of the process, developing the preliminary budget for next year, LCAP, giving you another snapshot of this year in March. So you'll see this chart over and over again. On a revenue update, just want to kind of go over this. We had mentioned this. Our original estimate for last year was 11.78%. The revenues ended up being 12% in terms of gap funding. And remember, LCFF is an eight-year plan to restore funding to 07-08 levels. Each year of that 100% gap, they try to close a little bit more. So last year was a decent year. Well, this year ended up even being, well, hasn't ended up, but the estimate for this year is 29.56%. So obviously our funding's higher, but nothing new to most of you and Mr. Rasmussen. It's just been a very, a long way towards restoring that funding this year. And you can see the annual COLA doesn't match our revenue increase because, again, we're in a restoration funding model. We have 29.56% of that gap of closing that the millions of dollars of money that we're still it's still at a level that we're looking back at 07-08. COLA itself is part of that restoration funding. It's only 8.85%. And you can see of our revenue, there's been a little bit of uptick. Again, the majority is coming from LCFF, and that's unrestricted revenue under LCFF. Just a little bit on the variance, you could see. Hasn't been a lot of change, but we have increased money, and I'll explain that in a little more detail as we go through. Some of it, a lot of the federal revenue, for example, was deferred revenue, so you can't recognize it until the next year. Has to do with carryover kind. It's not, you have carryover on programs, but you can't recognize the revenue until that fiscal year. Our expenditures, you can see the breakdown of our expenditures. Been a little bit of change, and I'll show you the variances on the next slide, but you can see where a majority of those, that money does still go to employees, people. people expenses and salaries and benefits. Some of the money, too, is a little higher in books and supplies because we pretty much code restricted monies there until we allocate it to the right budget trans. And you can see the variances have come a little bit. We've had virtually no change in certificated salaries. There's a small amount, but, again, we're rounding to the 100,000th because when you're dealing with $84.1 million expenditures, then it goes up quite a bit. But I'm going to go through all the different variances through the year since annual budget's been adopted. But you can see we've risen a little bit in expenditures. So here's really what the impact on what our usable money is for this year. And as we that budget continually evolves, we adopted a budget with $2.38 million in budget surplus on the unrestricted side. If you look at our budget now, first interim, say, well, we only have a surplus of a little less than $700,000. Well, that's taking into account restricted, which shows negative. But again, restricted programs will spend what they have, and they'll carry it over the next year. So the money that's really usable and that we can put into further actions to increase or improve services for students as part of the LCAP or wherever one is the money that's on the unrestricted side. That's where all the LCFF dollars are. So we started with 2.38, and we added a bunch of ongoing adjustments. These things, when I mean ongoing, it means these are the kind of things that you implement. They'll be there continually year after year. Whereas the one-time things are things that once you spend them, you're not going to have to spend them for a long time. It might be something you buy once every 20 years, every 30 years, or never again. And so on the ongoing side, we had that increase in LCFF funds. The gap percentage increased. We made some adjustments to salaries and benefits in terms of what was budgeted versus what was actual, people moving up and down. It changes a little bit from budgeted. We made some other expenditures. We've added some expenditures. We added some money to in recurring to the budgets and whatnot of departments and school sites. And the LCAP cost reduction, some of the things that we developed in the LCAP, the actual final cost of what they are and what we need to budget for are less than what we originally budgeted in the adopted budget. Some of the things that caused that money to go down a little bit were we had to do some additional contributions to a couple special ed items. We added WASP budgets for the sites. Insurance went up a little bit that we didn't know. We had to move facility salaries and benefits to the general fund because it was in developer fees, but we're not experiencing growth. We had increased costs for credit recovery program, PBIS program, and a little bit for grounds. So that brought us, though, the net still brought us up to $3.07 million. So when you look at the budget, you say, well, there's a 2.67 at the very bottom, there's a 2.67 rounds up to $1 million surplus on the unrestricted side. Well, really, we started at 2.38, and if you look at the ongoing items, it's really about 3.07 because these other items are one time in nature, which means they'll make the ending fund balance go down, but you won't see them in the budget next year. And that had to do with we got a one time mandated cost payout, so they paid for all that old money in arrears. Now we get a mandated block grant, so that's built into the budget every year, so that's consistent ongoing revenue. But this is for old stuff, and it won't be paid again. And some of the indirect costs that we just one time, we didn't build it into the budget, so we recaptured some of the indirect costs that were budgeted prior. Some of the stuff, too, there were some facility one-time items that won't recur again. Security camera projects is budgeted, but again, that once that project's done, it's done. The only thing that's ongoing for those would be the maintenance and upkeep. Site lottery carryover. The reason that's one time is because we're going to budget moving forward that money will be carried over. It just wasn't budgeted prior because it wasn't placed in the budget at the time when it was developed, as well as the site targeted allocation carryover. But again, we're going to put those in, so those will be in the budget on the ongoing side. One time is just to make sure they get their carryover for this year. So that reconciles back to that 2.67, but again, we have about $3 million or a little over in budget surplus on the ongoing side. So regardless of what you see on unrestricted, you see on restricted in the total surplus, that's the real money that we have to spend on items as this budget further evolves. And you can see the components, too, of our ending fund balance. We have $13.8 million total as of right now, $7.8 million, which is unassigned or unappropriated. We're going to assign and appropriate some of that. We talked about our revenues finishing above our expenditures and audited actuals time. So there will be some one-time kind of bigger projects that expend that money, and we'll bring that to you as we develop them. As we move forward, we will also develop plans for how we intend to use the rest of the ending fund balance. But again, this is one-time money. I'm not going to go through the detail of the multi-year assumptions. Suffice it to say, as you build a budget, every time you put in a lot of information that's based on what you think is going to occur, such as what our attendance is going to be, we assume flat enrollment and thus the same attendance percentage. Doesn't necessarily occur. Again, this is the best estimates at the time we have. We use the gap funding percentage from school services, for example. That's a little conservative, you know, 7.9%. We'll probably get higher next year, and economic indicators are good. Again, on this multi-year projection, assumptions are very hard, especially on the revenue side, because we don't know how much we're going to get. That's when I come back in January, I'll tell you, hey, we got a pretty good idea of what we're going to get in 15-16. And that's why we start formulating the LCAP and the additional expenditures that we could build in for not only the rest of this year, but next year. So if you look at kind of the big picture, and then the yellow really is the surplus. Even with those conservative estimates, our surplus, you know, is going to be pretty healthy in total. But again, the unrestricted side is even higher than this total. So as we move forward, there will be items that come up every year. We will have increased costs every year for basically benefits on the statutory side, goods and services, all those things, utilities, they all go up. Depending on where your staffing is, could have some increased costs in SEPA column, and then we're going to have some other additional costs next year that I'll talk about more in January in terms of things that will were flexible in old times and the maintenance of effort and whatnot are going away. So, but it still looks like a positive approach in the future. Again, the revenue is very conservative, though. You can see that line going up. You know, again, it isn't our intention to build any fund balance. We're at a healthy level. So we'll continue to add expenditures throughout the year to flatten or even maybe make that go down a little bit because, again, we're doing some of those one-time expenditures. So our goal really is to balance the budget. You know, we talk about a $3 million in ongoing. So it may look a little negative, but in terms of the structural surplus, we want to balance it. And so we're going to do things that increase or improve services for students. Because that money really that's left over is concentration and supplemental grant money from LCFF. One-time expenditures, again, we're going to spend that $671,000. That was revenue over expenditures. Again, you budget everything. You're not going to spend every single line item. It was still under 1% variance. So we'll find items to spend that. There's a lot of need. We were talking about that South Lyndhurst High School portable. That definitely will come out of that money because we have to add that building to consolidate the continuation school. And then, really, next year, we're already starting the process towards building towards the 15-16 LCAP and adopted budget. And so I updated the budget calendar, and we're in December, so here's our first interim presentation. We're going to have our first LCAP budget meeting, advisory meeting, I think it's called the LBAC, the LCAP Budget Advisory Committee meeting. If it doesn't happen, we'll make that determination tomorrow. If it doesn't happen this Thursday, we'll move it a week to next Thursday. So we'll make that determination tomorrow. I've been going out to budget sites and going out to school sites and giving people updates on the budget. Staff's been great, you know, really. Teachers been asking great questions. We were just at Johnson Park this week. Last week I went to Lyndhurst, and our superintendent's been attending as many as she can fit into her schedule as well. Just answering questions, just getting out there. It's part of the process, you know, as we go forward and we ask for input in this advisory committee process, we need to know what people believe will really move the needle for our students. For not only the rest of this year, but as we build towards next. And again, in January, I'll present the updated items, so we'll have a pretty good idea where we're going to go in 15-16 revenue-wise. And we'll continue the process throughout the year. Second committee meeting will be in February. Second interim will be presented in March, so I'll have further updated numbers. They will change. No shock there. We'll have a third budget committee, and that's where we'll probably develop our survey. Fourth meeting, we'll collect the results of that survey, and those will become recommendations for our superintendent to include in the LCAP as she presents it to you ultimately in June. And we'll also have site LCAP visits if necessary to update people on where we're going towards that 15-16 budget. And the May revise will come in May, so it'll give us our last tweaks to our assumptions for the 15-16 budget. And then we'll present it all to you in June. Our budgets will get approved, our LCAP will get approved, and then ultimately the state budget will get approved. So that's the update. I know I kind of go fast for some of it, but there's been a little bit of a positive movement, I think, in terms of our surplus this year. We've already made some operational changes. These will continue to happen. The outlook looks good. but we don't know how good until January, and we'll let you know then. Any questions? Thank you. And this is Jennifer Pasaglia, our Director of Fiscal Services. This is her first budget process. And, you know, we've had help from Ryland and so on. So we really appreciate that. She's learning everything very quickly, and it's been great so far. So we're going to continue. That's, you know, I present it, but that's really your master of the budget
well
right
done.
There.
It's easy read for me. It's important. Thank you, both of you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Or thank you.
Okay, if there's no other questions, we have a... We have a motion.
I'll make that motion to approve.
Okay. And we need a second. Okay, Mr. Harris. And all those in favor, please raise your hands. Aye. Unanimous. Okay, that concludes the business. I'm handed this sheet to close the meeting in memory of Mary Ellen Pedlock Murphy. Her. Is that correct?
Yes. She was in our transportation department.
Would you like to say a few words?
You know, what makes us a great district is our employees. And unfortunately, we've lost several over the last few years. Mary Ellen Petlick was in the transportation department. She was an integral part of that department in the Hills. She did, the kids loved her up there. And then she got sick and passed away. She was one of those great employees. If you read the obituary in the paper, she really touched many, many lives in the foothills. And actually, her father used to work for the transportation department for her many years ago. So I would like to close in her memory for the service she provided this district.
And before you close the meeting, I just would like to remind all of the board members that you need to see Lisa and give her your signature for the folder, please.
Okay, if there's no other comments.